You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
Episode number 99 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Fake News. Fake News is a punk band from Gold Coast, Australia. Formed in late 2017, Fake News released their first single 2 months later and played their first show at their guitarist Mick's house opening for Guttermouth. With a sound reminiscent of the 90s punk heyday, the band draws influences from Fat and Epitaph bands with a little heavy metal thrown in for good measure. For more information on Fake News, you can check them out at fakenews.bandcamp.com or on Facebook at Fake News Punk. Now here it is, their new single, In the Grind Pit.
Cobain,
of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
this is Zach Quinn from Paris, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the van, cause tomorrow we'll do it. We'll do it all again.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, what is going on? As always, this is Chris Swinney, your host for That One Time on Tour. If this is your first time joining me, this is my podcast where I get to sit down with somebody in or around the entertainment industry and have a stellar conversation. Thank you so much for last week. My guest was John Tuttle from the band Code 7. And you guys seem to really enjoy it. I got some really good feedback, so thanks for checking that out. I'm really hoping that Furnace Fest happens. I know it's kind of far away, but all of the festivals and everything have been closing down for this pandemic that we're having. And Code 7, one of their reunion shows, is going to be at Furnace Fest down in Alabama. So make sure to get your tickets now for that. And hopefully, fingers crossed, the coronavirus will not affect Furnace Fest, because there's some amazing bands playing down there. This week on the program, I get to chat with Mr. Zach Quinn from the awesome band Pairs. They have a new self-titled release out on Fat Records. It came out earlier this month, and we did this interview before the record came out, so we talk about it kind of being in the future, but it's out now, and you guys need to check it out. There's a three on the cover. We talk about, you know, is this called three? No, it's the self-titled Pairs record, but it is the third record. So check that out on Spotify and everywhere else, or pick up a copy at the Fat Records website. And man, this virus is just crazy. I've been doing so many interviews because I'm self-quarantining. You know, I'm here in my house with my wife and my son and my daughter. And I've almost been doing an interview every day because I'm not working. And the weird thing is, like, no one is playing shows, no one's touring or doing anything, but publicists have been hitting me up like crazy. They're like, hey, do you want to do this, 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 this? So I've been filling up everything, man. Like, if the podcast was a well-paying job, I'd be killing it during the coronavirus. But I'm having a good time with it. I'm trying to bank as many interviews as possible so I can keep the content coming out to you guys during this crazy time in our world. And I was talking to my wife earlier, and we were watching this TV show, and they were saying that this is like the worst kind of thing, and like economical thing to happen since World War II. And it's strange to think that we're living through something like this. You know, like, I remember when 9/11 happened, I had just gotten home from a tour. We'd driven all the way back from Dallas, Texas to Indiana, and I was living at my mom's house, and I went to sleep on my little punk rock bed that didn't have a box spring. It was just a mattress on the floor in this room. And she comes in and wakes me up a half hour later, and she's like, oh, we're being attacked. And I just remember how weird that was, and watching the TV like every day after that, just like not sleeping, not eating. And then this is kind of like that, and there's no end in sight. That's the scary thing about this. You know, I've been on edge quite a bit. My wife has as well. And it's the not knowing. It's not knowing when I'm going to get to go back to work. It's not knowing if we're going to be in the house until the middle of the summer. And then not even knowing if this is the new norm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a hugger. I hug people all the time. I shake hands all the time. Am I not going to be able to do that anymore? It's scary. And I know a lot of you guys out there are dealing with it as well. And I hope you're doing well. I hope you're staying safe. And just don't go outside. Don't do anything. Just stay in and use this time to be creative. That's what you could do with this. Everybody always talks about needing more time. Well, now you got the time. So go ahead and do it. So I got to tell you guys about my sponsors for this week's episode. Fake News, amazing band out of Australia, Gold Coast, Australia. You got to check them out. Fake News. Let me see the little website here. Fakenews.bandcamp.com, or on Facebook at Fake News Punk. Permanence Tattoo Gallery over in Anderson, Indiana on Meridian Street. It's where I get my ink done. It's where you need to get your ink done. So hit them up on the socials at Permanence Tattoo Gallery and head on over when all this stuff goes away and get some tattoos, man. Merge 4, they make socks. They make the best socks. They're amazing. Check them out, merge4.com. And if you guys want to buy some stuff from Merge 4, hit me up. I will send you a promo code for 50% off your order. That is 50, 50% off your order. So check them out over on merge4.com and tell them that TOTOT sent you. A new sponsor we've had on for a couple episodes, Start Famous. Go on over to startfamous.com. They're an awesome merch print shop out of Canada, and they can do anything you want. They've got the highest quality, the fastest turnaround. They've really taken care of us. They sent me a little gift bag with some really cool stuff. I got a hoodie, and they sent this trucker cap, and I gave it to my son, and he loves it. He won't give it back to me. So hit up startfamous.com, and when you check out, when you're ordering your merch, put in the promo code TOTOT10. That is TOTOT10 to get 10% off your order. If you have a band or a company and you would like to become a sponsor, you can hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. And I'm cutting super, super crazy coronavirus discounts if you want to become a sponsor. So hit me up. I've got some amazing episodes coming up that need some sponsors. So hit me up and we will take care of that. If you do not have a band or a company and you would still like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/TOTOT podcast and get involved there. We have two new patrons this week. I need to give shout outs to Michael Crosby from the United Kingdom and Justin from, I have no idea because he signed up under Justin. That's it. So shout out to Michael Crosby over in England and Justin, wherever you live. Thank you so much for sponsoring. Here's a little claps for you guys. Thank you so much. And also our two Patreon producers, Bob Foster from Hemet, California, and John Exton from Stafford, England. Thank you guys so much. It means the world to me, especially in these crazy times. And you guys helped the show, and I appreciate it so much. It's great. I couldn't do it without you guys. So that is it for the sponsors. Thank you guys for listening to that. And please check my sponsors out. I know there's not a lot of extra money going around right now, but if you guys want some really cool stuff, my sponsors are amazing companies, and they support the underground music scene, and they support this show, and you guys should support them. Okay, so I have a pretty cool radio segment this week, so hit the theme music. Radio, radio, radio. Radio, radio, radio. When I've got the music, I've got the place to go. On this edition of TOTOT Radio, I've got a really cool one for you guys. And yes, it is coronavirus pandemic themed. My good buddy, Mr. Dan Precision from the amazing band 88 Fingers Louie. He used to be in Rise Against as well. He put this really cool thing up on Facebook, actually on YouTube, but he shared it on Facebook. He took the Blondie classic song Call Me. He recorded all the instruments at his home studio, the Bomb Shelter, and he called it Quarantine instead of Call Me, changed all the lyrics. It's really, really cool. He sang everything, did harmonies, played guitar, bass, drums, and there's a really cool video on YouTube where you can kind of see him doing everything. There's lights and everything. And I got to say, my old band Chronic Chaos, when I met Dan back in the day, I had an 88 Fingers Louie tattoo. I used to go see them all the time when they'd come into Indiana. And then I met him at Warped Tour hanging out. He wasn't playing. He was just there. And I was there when I was a lot younger. And I gave him a demo of my old band Chronic Chaos. And he said, hey, I'd like to work with you guys. And we actually did two full-length CDs at his home studio, the Bomb Shelter, up in Chicago. So if any of you guys are looking to have anything mixed or mastered or do some recording or whatever, hit up Dan, Mr. Dan Precision. You can just Google the Bomb Shelter Chicago. It'll come up. And he's a great dude. And I thought this was amazing. And it made my day. And right now with everything that's going on, it's great to see all my friends being so creative. There's so many amazing podcasts and amazing musicians out there. Everybody's doing live streams. And it's it's kind of a cool time because you're forced inside. So you're forced to kind of make stuff. And that's exactly what Dan did. And I just want to give a shout out to Dan and all the other guys in 88 Fingers Louie as well. Hope to have you guys back on the show soon. But until then, I want you guys to enjoy this. This is Dan's take on the Blondie classic Call Me. It is entitled Quarantine, and it is very, very much themed for the times we're going through right now. So here we go. There it was, Quarantine by Mr. Dan Precision of 88 Fingers Louie. So I just want to say, Dan, that's awesome. I love it so much. I hope you don't get mad that I played it on the show as I didn't ask permission. But I highly doubt that you ask Blondie's permission to change the lyrics. So go ahead and check that out on YouTube. It's got a crazy amount of plays on YouTube. Just search Dan Precision Quarantine and it should come up. But that is it for the intro, guys and girls. Remember, you can follow us on all the social media platforms at TOTOT Podcast. Make sure, if you want to help the show out, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. That is the cheapest, it's free, and easiest way to help the show out. But without further ado, I'm going to jump right into my conversation with Zach Quinn from Pairs. It's a good one. I hope you guys like it. Here we go. And I'm on the line with Mr. Zach Quinn from the awesome band Pairs. How you doing today, Zach?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm actually currently walking down Franklin Avenue going to the bar.
Oh, cool. You're in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Are you born and raised in New Orleans, or is that like a newer place you've lived?
Oh, no, born and raised. I haven't really lived anywhere else. I've stayed a couple places for weeks at a time, but never a full-on resident, you know?
So I always had a question because I lived in Gulf Shores, Alabama for a while. And we used to go to New Orleans all the time, like on the weekends. The tourists annoyed the shit out of me. So I'd like to know from someone that's local, when you go down to like Bourbon Street, how annoyed are you with the people?
Oh yeah. Here's the thing. I don't go down to fucking Bourbon Street.
Okay.
That's like a 10-foot stick away from anywhere I would ever go to. But they drive me nuts too. There absolutely is like the absence of like general rule here, but there is etiquette, and it seems like they understand the first half, but not the second half.
So how close do you live to like the French Quarter? I'm always amazed by people that actually live in that. And then in that city, I have a lot of friends that went there, like moved there to work in the service industry, but like people that grow up there, like where exactly are you at in the city?
I live in the St. Rock neighborhood, which is, I guess, I mean, I can walk to the French Quarter. It takes about 20 minutes probably. I don't ever go much down there. And especially like people that live in the French Quarter, like that's some pricey, real estate.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I just grew up actually in the St. Rock area. After a certain point, I was like bouncing around when I was young because my parents divorced and I lived in a bunch of different houses, but, eventually settled at my grandparents' house.
So were you affected? I mean, I know you probably were. Most people were by Hurricane Katrina when that hit down there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know people, plenty of people that were far more affected than I was. I was essentially just displaced for a little while. And our house had gotten 8.5 feet of water. But we live on the second story, and the water had come up to the second to last stair.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was a close call for us. Essentially, once power was back on, it was like nothing happened, aside from the fact that the downstairs was just gutted out completely, but we never went down there anyway.
Was the city just like in shambles? Just like when you like watching it from the TV, it just looked insane. Like what was the general like vibe for you when that was all going on?
Oh man, it was an absolute fucking nightmare. I mean, it was super fucking eerie when we got back. Cause I mean, luckily like my family has been long established in the neighborhood. And so we were a little better off than a lot. I mean, most of the people in this neighborhood are like very low income, like hanging on by the skin of their teeth. So we were able to go back to the neighborhood before like anybody else was. So it was like a ghost town, man. I mean, no. And when we first got back, like no street lights, no nothing, just complete black.
Wow.
And nobody. And it was really, really eerie.
So everybody that I've known that grew up in that area, they have this like affinity for their hometown. And I know that, you know, being in a band and, you know, I was in a band, I traveled all the time. I know you go all over the world when you're touring. Has there ever been a place that you've seen that you thought maybe you would want to live, or is it New Orleans forever for you?
There definitely have been places that I have thought about living. It's not terribly realistic for me. I'm not too well off on money. Relocating is kind of a really difficult concept, but there are places absolutely that I would live.
Yeah.
Though I don't know if I like any city in the world as much as I like my hometown.
Well, that's awesome, man. That's kind of the general consensus when I talk to people that grew up there, you know?
Yeah. I really can't tell whether it's because I just love it so much or whether this place is so fucked up that I don't know if I could function anywhere else because like my standard of living is so bizarre, not low or high, but just strange. I'm not sure it would fly anywhere else.
Well, and it's such a good music city. I mean, I wouldn't say it's maybe the best punk rock music city, but there is such like a culture and, you know, with the Cajun music and all that stuff. How did you, you know, when you were younger, get into kind of the counterculture, like punk rock thing? How did that come into your life?
Honestly, I mean, it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of a repetitive story, as far as like people that came up at the time that I did.
Yeah.
Cause at that point, you know, music was far less regional. It's even less regional now. There are bands now that, 30 years ago would have had to have been from the West Coast. And now it's like, they could be from anywhere and sound anyhow.
Yeah. There used to be a definite, like, if you heard that West Coast Fat Wreck Epitaph kind of thing, you knew where they were from, but now it's completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. The internet changed everything. I mean, like, the fact that you can, you have access to music from all over the world, anywhere in the world, has changed the game. But so, with that said, I mean, I got into the shit the same way that a lot of people did, finding like the mainstream stuff that had just broken in the 90s, and then kind of falling down a rabbit hole from there.
So what were some of those first bands, like not maybe the mainstream bands, that kind of spoke to you?
It'd be hard to name just one, but I can tell you the Fat Epitaph, like, roster.
Okay.
Because one serious thing to, I guess, mention was that was the time of the $3 comp.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that. We talk about that on this program all the time. If I didn't have those early Fat comps and Punkaramas, I don't know if I would even be doing what I'm doing, you know?
Right, same. It was such, like, an easy way to be exposed to so many things all at once, which I guess, like, it was a good double for the internet back then.
Yeah.
Those just kind of started piling up. And then, you picked out the handful of bands that you liked the most and started getting full lengths by those bands. And for me, that was, Lagwagon, NoFX, Bad Religion, the standards. And then from there, I got really heavy into 80s hardcore.
Oh, that's cool, man. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 31.
31, man. You're a baby. I'm 41.
right on, man.
No, I'm sure you don't feel like a baby, but, like, it's funny, like, for the last few weeks, I've been talking to people that are my age, if not, like, 10 years older.
So right.
Nice to have a youngster on the show, if I can call you that. But
sure. No, absolutely. I'll take it, man.
That's awesome.
I pulled my back putting on a sock the other day, so I'll absolutely take it.
Dude, the other day, I came out of the bathroom, and my wife had mopped the floor, and I went completely, like, horizontal and hit the ground, and I thought I was going to die. I thought I had to go to the hospital, man. When you get old, it
Jesus
sucks.
Christ. Yeah, man. I mean, like, things like that are slowly starting to happen more often. I shudder to think 10 years from now in your shoes.
Well, that's the thing. I'm 41 years old, and I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. I got a late start, so I'm having to be a little bit younger acting as I'm getting older.
Right.
So, I know that you guys, before you guys got Pairs going, which I want to get into some of the band talk, you had a band called The Lollies. That broke up like a year before you guys got the band going for Pairs in 2014. Had you been in like a lot of bands?
That's a difficult question to answer because after a certain point, it's like, what even constitutes a band?
Yeah. Is it like playing a gig or just jamming or whatever? Yeah.
Right. But I had been playing music with so many people for so long. Like real bands I was in, I kind of consider the Lollies to be my first real band.
Like, you guys worked and like played shows out of town and did all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like we put out a record on a local label and we did all the things that like a real band does. I had played, in bands in my teenage years, and we would play like 4 shows and break up and never record a thing. I don't really consider that. There's too many of those to even remember.
Yeah, totally. So what caused the Lollies to break up?
I think just it was one of those things. It's like stagnance, we hadn't felt like we were doing anything for a long time. We barely toured. And I think we did like 2 separate 3-week runs and that was about it. We had an album and we just kind of were playing a local show once a month. And I don't know, it's kind of just felt dead.
And forgive me, I haven't listened to the Lollies. Was that kind of along the same lines as what you're doing now?
In the same kind of world, it was far less like hardcore oriented.
Yeah.
It was essentially, it's one of those records, like you can start to hear that me and Predis were like developing our own identity as like as players.
Yeah.
But mostly it just sounds like propaganda worship. Like
there's nothing wrong with that, man. Believe me.
No, no, sure. I mean, you could definitely pick way shittier bands to like emulate. Yeah. Yeah. But it totally like the record kind of just sounds like how to clean everything.
Okay. Awesome. So that band broke up about a year later, 2014. You and Predis started Pairs. What was it like?
Right.
Were you guys always just like the two good buddies that were in that band? So you decided that you wanted to start this other band together, or like how did that all come about?
No, actually, in the Lollies, like Brian, like never even showed up to rehearsal.
Okay.
So like when he wanted to start another band, I told him no like a billion times because like I just wasn't into the idea of doing the runaround and not really having anything come of it, you know? And if I was going to be in another band, I would want it to be something that was just fun. So I don't know, eventually like I relented and I'm really glad I did. Cause I don't know what happened between the two projects. I mean, you know, you could figure like people just grow up,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
Brian had like, he was fully determined to like, I mean, he has definitely always been the business side of the group.
I feel like you have to kind of, I was always kind of that with my bands as well. And I feel like there has to be kind of this balance between the artistic side and then someone in the band has to know how to order merch or send CDs to labels or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's really like he knows how to do all that shit. He learned how to do all that shit seemingly overnight. I can't imagine the hard work that was in the early couple of years, but it was also, it had just a lot to do with the general, like, desire, you know,
yeah,
the desire to learn how to do those things, which I don't possess. So I'm glad that he did.
Well, you're the artistic side. That's the balance, right?
Well, that's the cop out. But really, I think the bottom line is that I'm just a fucking mess.
Okay.
I like to say, yeah, I'm just being the artist.
Every band kind of needs to have a fucking mess, though, too, I think.
I think to an extent, you're absolutely right. I got to keep it on check.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
But yeah, I think you're right.
So you guys get the band going. Like I listen to a couple interviews. I always like to prepare a little bit before I talk to someone that I've not met before.
Uh-huh.
And what kept coming up in different interviews with you guys was that everything seemed to go so fast. And I mean, I think that some people might have thought it was fast, but I'm sure there was a lot of determination and work put in, especially what you were just telling me about Brian. But how mm-hmm. soon after you formed, did you guys release something?
Oh, wow. I mean, 3 months or 4 months.
Wow.
We put out Go to Prison.
Wow. 3 or 4 months. That is kind of fast, I guess, when you think about it.
It's really fucking fast, man. I mean, we recorded the album. When we had recorded the record, we hadn't been a band for a month yet.
So what's the writing process like? I mean, especially back there in the beginning, like how were you guys putting songs together? Was someone coming in with a full song or were you guys kind of like doing it together at practice?
We were kind of just doing it together and kind of like the idea was, you know, there are no bad ideas. Let's just string this shit together.
Yeah.
Which kind of like that sort of became how we ended up with these like hodgepodge songs that sounded like three songs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of saying yes to every ounce of material. And when you don't turn stuff away, it's easy to fucking write a record real quick.
Yeah.
But the process has definitely evolved over the years. And I think now for Green Star was like an extremely selective process.
Yeah.
And then this last one, that it comes out, you know, next month was definitely, I think, some sort of like happy medium between the two.
What is your process? I mean, since you're doing the vocals, I mean, for the most part, are you writing all the lyrics as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say like 95% of them. There have been a couple of times where it's just been too much of I don't know. There's like a part that doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
And Predis or somebody will kind of finagle the words to fit in a more, I don't know, proper way. But most of the time, yeah, I've written almost every single lyric for the band, and that process is strange because I mean, the record we just did, I didn't have a single word written when we went into the studio.
Wow.
And it just kind of, I would just go outside and smoke a cigarette and kind of shit stuff out.
Well, yeah, we talk about that on this podcast a lot too. Like some bands, you know, they just have this like complete vision for what the song's going to be. And then some bands kind of do the Metallica thing where you write the song and then you hum a melody with no words at all to get it down. And then you write the words. So if you're in the studio, then are you hearing these songs that are already put together and then trying to come up with stuff?
It's kind of like the stuff kind of happens in tandem.
Okay.
I would say mostly, you know, I'm working on lyrics by the time that drums and bass are starting to get down. And in that time, like they're still figuring out the complete arrangements and like, you know, how many times this part has to happen. And I don't know, it really was kind of, very, very fluid.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, we tried to, as much as possible, just let the songs write themselves, make a decision and stick with it. Try not to overthink things, because Green Star had been like a heavily overthought record. And I mean, I'm happy with the way it came out completely, but the experience of making it was not, it was quite tedious and difficult. And I wasn't stoked to do that again.
So, I mean, and that was like the first actual full length that came out on Fat, correct?
Yeah. They had re-released Go to Prison, but okay. It was the first one that like came out on Fat.
So releasing Go to Prison 3 to 4 months into the band, how did you come to the attention of Fat? Like, how did that happen? Because I mean, people in all these interviews said it was fast. I kind of downplayed that, but it seems a little fast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think we owe that almost completely to Ryan Young.
Okay.
He pressed the first vinyl version of Go to Prison on his handle, Anxious and Angry.
Okay.
I think for him, it was never like an end all. It was, I'm going to press the first round and try to find these guys a permanent home. So he really kind of like pushed us, and he pushed us to a bunch of different people. In fact, just kind of seemed like a good match, and they were keen to do it. So, and the rest is history, I guess.
So is it one of those stories that I get told on this podcast all the time, because it's pretty Fat heavy. I've got a good relationship with Vanessa. Shout out to Vanessa.
Yo, Vanessa.
Yeah. Vanessa gave me the wrong phone number though. I will say.
Yeah, that. I know. I haven't told Vanessa my new phone number. How hilarious is awesome. That?
Tell her right now. Nobody will call you, I swear.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so signing with Fat, there's always that story of where like Mike gives you a call. Like, how did that all go down with you guys?
Mike called me while I was on vacation. And he called me at fucking 1 a.m. Okay. And I honestly don't even remember the phone call, because it was such like a bizarre experience. You know what I mean? Like I kind of just blacked out and then hung up and went, what just happened?
Did you believe that it was him?
Yeah, I did. I did. I mean, you know, because once you know, like you're signing the Fat, it's like, it's not that outrageous to think that.
That he's going to call it. Yeah.
One of the owners of the label might call you.
Well, I tell you, I always revert back to this story. I played in a band called the Ataris, and our singer Chris, when he actually like got signed back in the day, this is way before I was in the picture, but he had gone to see, I think, the Queers and the Vandals in Cincinnati, and he gave a demo tape to Joe Escalante from the Vandals, who owns Kung Fu. And like a year and a half later, at like 7 a.m, he gets a phone call at his mom's house from Joe, and he hung up on him like 3 times because he didn't. This is before cell phones and shit. No email. This is like an old school landline, and he hung up on him 3 times.
Yeah.
I just always thought that was funny. So when people tell me like, oh, we signed to Fat and like, there's no story, I'm always like, there's gotta be something like with Mike calls or whatever.
Yeah. No, it definitely happened. I definitely don't really remember what was spoken of.
Yeah.
But it was like, okay, this is it did make it feel like real.
Yeah.
And it's also like this thing where like, you know, what's going to fucking happen now?
Yeah, because you never know. I mean, in the climate of how the music industry is, I mean, if you guys signed with Fat in the 90s, you would have probably, you know, bought houses.
I would have. Yeah, I would have gone back to school, man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you were talking about kind of the added scrutiny on, you know, Green Star with the first like full release on Fat that wasn't a re-release. Do you think the whole like the idea of being on Fat and kind of did it add some anxiety and you guys wanted to make sure that it was like the right release?
It definitely added a metric fuck ton of anxiety. It was the first time we've ever written a record that we knew people were going to hear.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it changes a lot. But I kind of, like, the mantra for me has always been, like, you know, our guts got us here.
Yeah.
So why stop trusting them now?
Yeah, totally.
So really, it was like the whole process was about ignoring that pressure and just kind of doing what felt natural. Yeah.
How hands-on was Fat while you guys were in the studio with that record? Because I've kind of heard conflicting stuff. Sometimes they're very involved. Sometimes they're not.
I think at one point there was a version of the way things were going to play out. Like, Mike was going to, like, kind of produce the pre-production stuff, you know, and kind of, like, get write notes about the tunes. And in our classic fashion, we just didn't do that shit enough in time.
Yeah.
So we kind of, but right before we went into the studio, we sent the tunes over to Mike, and he was like, I think these are kind of good to go.
Awesome.
And so we just kind of went for it.
That's awesome, man. So you've got this new record coming out on March 6th on Fat Records. It's the third full length, and I was wondering, is it self-titled or is it three? Because there's a three on the cover.
Right. It is self-titled, but I love that there's the little three on it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. 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 It's the self-titled record. I think it was just like, I felt like whatever we were going to do this time was going to end up being pretty definitive for us.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, we've now, like, trudged through, like, the woods of, like, what we want to be as a group. And we've found, like, what we sound like completely. And it turned out that way. It definitely feels more definitive and more us than anything we've done.
So you guys worked with Chris Fogel of the Gamuts out in Denver. His production is just stellar, man. Like,
how
was it being in the studio with him?
It was fucking fantastic. And I knew it would be because we had just done me and Brian Wallstrom had just done the Band-Aid Brigade record there.
Okay.
Which is how we had decided to go and do this record with Chris as well. I just came home from that first experience and told the Pairs guys, like, yo, this guy is just wonderful, and he's patient and creative, has a great ear. We need to go there. And it was fucking fantastic. I mean, I liked it. I'm about to go cut another solo record with Chris.
Awesome.
In like a couple of weeks.
So tell me a little bit about the Band-Aid Brigade, because I saw some stuff on the internet about that, but I don't know much about it. Could you fill me in on, like, was that going pre-Pairs or was that something that started kind of after?
Oh, it started after. It was, I guess, a product of the 1 Week Records tour.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Joey was on the show about a couple months ago, man. He was talking all about 1 Week Records.
Mm-hmm. So I had done a record on 1 Week Records in 2016. I did one. And then I went, I started doing tours with Joey from time and again, you know, whenever we could both do it. And on one particular tour, it was Joey, Donald Spence, Brian Wallstrom, and I.
Okay.
And me and Brian just kind of hit it off and shared a lot of the same musical tastes. And I think we just started liking the idea of, like, kind of mining our collective interests of, like, rock and pop over the ages and trying to write something that that was, in a way, nostalgic, but also, I mean, the way that I always put it is, it's like we took everything that we liked from previous decades of rock music and pop music and kind of did away with the shit that we didn't like.
Okay, yeah.
Genesis is wonderful. But every Genesis song is like 5 minutes longer than it needs to be.
Yeah,
that's a great example of you know, what we tried to change. And I don't know. I'm really excited with the way it came out. That record came out last month.
Awesome, man.
I think we're going to do much more.
And as far as the solo stuff, like you said, you did a solo record on 1 Week. You're getting ready to go do another solo record. What label is that going to be on? Or is this going to be like self-released?
Not sure yet. But it's going to be a different kind of thing. The 1 Week record was true to 1 Week form.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bare, like, acoustic record. This, on the other hand, is going to be like, it's an electric record. It'll be a punk record.
Awesome.
But it kind of like punk in the way that, Wire and the Wipers and that early sort of like art punk.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I'm thinking, what it's going to be. Devo a little too.
Okay. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, I also, when I was looking around for stuff on the internet, I saw that one of your Bridge City Sessions videos where you did that Cyndi Lauper cover Time After Time. I got to say, that was great, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think I'm going to record that. But I'm not sure if I'll flesh out a full arrangement of it or just leave it just guitar and vocals.
How was that experience for the 1 week records thing? Because Joey said it kind of changed over time. Like it used to be, it had to be done in 7 days. And then it had to be like, well, the tracking had to be done in 7 days. So was yours true right. to form?
It was, the tracking was done in 7 days.
Okay.
And it was back when he was doing them in his basement.
Okay.
But we actually, that was, I think, right around when he started to be a little more lax with the formula, because at first I was only going to do an EP. And he was going to call it a weekend record, which is something that he had done before. But I went out there and we had so much fun making half of a record. We were just like, let's do another half. So I went back out for another like 3 days. So we did it in chunks, but it's still 1 week.
Well, that's awesome, man. And to anybody out there that doesn't know, 1 week records is basically, at the beginning, it was everything had to be done in 1 week, but then he started to get a little lax as it went on.
Yeah, because it is really kind of like, that's some tough shit.
It's tough, and yeah.
I mean, now, if there's anybody that can do it, it's him, because he is a tough motherfucker in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
I think at one point, my favorite quote from Joey to me during those sessions was, "Who taught you how to sing?" Was the answer
nobody?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
really, the funnier, pretty true answer would have been, "You motherfucker."
Yeah, right.
but he really gets the best out of the people that he works with, and he's got he kind of has an ear for the full picture even when you don't.
Yeah.
Which is pretty helpful, essentially, considering that you're trying to do a whole thing in 1 week.
Oh yeah, totally, man.
Yeah.
Well, this show is about touring. I try to hit a lot of different areas, but I'm friends with some of the guys in Rise Against, and I know you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you guys toured with them back a couple years ago, and I know that it was also with Sleeping with Sirens.
Yeah,
you might have got this question quite a bit. I mean, I can see you guys touring with Rise Against, but Sleeping with Sirens seems like that's kind of an odd band to have on that tour. And I know they have a lot of fans. I know this was over in Europe. Like, what was the reaction for you guys as the opener on that tour?
if you've ever tried to imagine what a room with 17,000 people in it,
yeah,
being quiet, that's kind of what it was like. I think that what it comes down to is the shared base between Rise Against and Sleeping with Sirens, because they do have, like, there's plenty of crossover because Rise Against is so massive.
Yeah, there's a definite Venn diagram of Rise Against and probably Nickelback or any other band, right?
Right. Any like bands that are essentially like on commercial radio steadily.
Yeah.
And so I think the main issue was that in that Venn diagram where Sleeping with Sirens and Rise Against crossed over, there really wasn't any pairs in there.
Yeah.
Like I think had it been like, had it been Rise Against and then like another fucking like Fat or Epitaph punk band and us,
yeah,
it would have been like a completely different experience. But we were a tough sell on that tour.
So do you have any little tidbits from that tour? Like, did you guys try to win them over, or did you just go out there and just say, fuck you, we're just going to do our thing?
I don't know how trying to win someone over with pairs, I don't know what that would even look like.
Yeah.
It's kind of so brash that it's like, I don't know, you're either going to get it or you don't. And often it felt like they didn't.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, just like any other tour, we still have people that come to see us that first saw us because of that tour.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people there that totally dug it. I just, when I saw that, I almost thought it was a typo. I'm like, I can see Rise Against and Sleeping with Sirens, and I can see Rise Against in pairs. It just seemed like such a weird trio, you know?
Right. It was a strange trio. Now, at the same time, I mean, we just had a fucking blasty blast hanging out with both of those bands. Like,
yeah, I mean, I know Nick from Sleeping with Sirens. I used to play in a band with him called Underminded. I played bass for a while for them. So, like, yeah, all my buddies are in those bands. I just thought it was such an odd pairing.
Yeah, no, it totally is a fucking odd pairing. But me and Kellen still chit chat every once in a while. I mean, we share the Quinn moniker, so
that's awesome.
And my favorite story from that tour was I ran into a girl outside of a show who was crying because she had just met Kellen.
Okay,
like she must have been like 13 or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was crying because she had just met Kellen. And I asked her if I could get a picture with her. So I got a picture with a girl that was crying because she met Kellen Quinn.
Did you like, so you wanted to just have the picture because it was funny, but did you say you wanted the picture with her because she met Kellen?
I literally just told her, like, I want a picture with you because you're crying because you just met Kellen Quinn.
I thought it would have been really funny if you would have just been like, oh, you met him. I got to get a picture with you.
I got to get a picture with you, right. obviously, it's great because she thought that was funny. And she took the picture with me. So she's just like tears all over her face, but laughing.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest pictures I've ever taken.
Well, I've also, I was looking around for some stuff and I saw, you know, when you go to your Wikipedia page, there's quite a few ex-members. If you go to the Atari's page, I'm like the seventh guitar player. So I totally understand that.
Right.
But what I saw on there is that Chris and Rob from Strung Out actually filled in on bass for you guys when you guys were in Australia and New Zealand. Can you give me like the rundown on that?
Oh, God, that tour. Oh, my God. That was the worst, but also super fucking fun.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened was our bass player at the time had like a meltdown and didn't show up.
Wow.
And so we're just like on a plane to Australia without a bass player. And I mean, like, it was quite a fucking experience. And then, like, I think a week into that tour, I shattered my wrist.
Yeah, that was actually, I got to give a shout out. I always ask my listeners to ask questions. Dan from Australia, he was like, what happened to your arm while you were on tour with Strung Out in Australia? So there you go, Dan. He's going to answer right now.
Okay. Yeah. I did the Iron Man landing.
Okay.
And if you're not familiar with what that is, I jumped as high as I could in the air and landed with the fist down.
Ooh.
And I didn't pull the punch. So I did it just in the spirit of the moment and then just felt everything just kind of crumble.
Wow.
Man. And so I just finished the set with my like stupid crinkly hand dangling at my side.
Yeah.
And then walked off the stage right up to the TM and was like, I need to go to the hospital.
So I have a question about that. You know, the other countries in the world that have universal health care. Like when I was on tour in Canada one time, I had strep throat and I went to the doctor and got free medicine and everything was fine. So what's the process like that when you are an American in Australia and you shatter your arm?
Well, it was fucking incredible. And I didn't get completely free coverage because I'm just not a citizen.
Yeah.
So the first hurdle kind of was that we had to be in a different city every day.
Yeah.
And so for a while it was like every day we'd get so far in the hospital, but then they'd be, we'd get somewhere in a new city and they'd be like, no, we have to do our own x-rays. We have to do, you know, so it'd be like starting from scratch. So I just kind of bumbled around with a bunch of broken bones in my arm for like a week.
Wow.
But then finally we managed to get like copies of the x-rays from somebody who wasn't supposed to do that, but like, I guess, felt bad about our situation. And so we brought it to another hospital where they also weren't supposed to accept those, and they did.
Yes.
And I was able to get the surgery. Multiple emergency room visits, surgery, and a follow-up appointment all ended up costing me $900.
That's insane, man. That's for, awesome.
Yeah, as an American, you know how crazy that is.
Yeah, that's insane, man.
It's fucking bonkers. And apparently, the people who do work on like carpals and hands out there are like some of the best in the world.
Yeah,
I have absolutely no problems with my hand or wrist now.
That's crazy, man. So you didn't have a bass player. You shatter your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything else happen on that tour that was kind of like, it seems cursed a little bit?
It definitely was. But I mean, I think it was just nothing else really major happened. And then, you know, about a week and a half in, Pat from The Decline, they were on Bird Attack, might still be, I'm not sure, but he started filling in on bass, and he filled in for the rest of the tour.
Okay.
So things kind of hit this stride of almost normalcy after a certain point.
Yeah.
And really, I just feel really good about, like, I mean, we made it through that tour, regardless of how weird or dumpy some of those shows might have been, because we're trying to play with a bass player who barely knows the fucking songs, or, you know, or like my arm is fucked up, my wrist is broken, and I don't know, as weird as some of those shows might have been, we survived, got home, and fucking kept going.
Were you guys doing ground transport, or were you guys flying from city to city? Because in Australia, man, those drives are brutal.
We were flying quite often.
I think that's the best way to do it over there.
Yeah, and they actually had to give me just like a half-closed cast because of the fact that I had to be on an airplane constantly. Because, like, you know, your limbs will swell.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, but... yeah, lots of flying. And then they gave me the fucking hydrocodone, and that was just like a 3-day vacation.
awesome.
I mean, I was just like high as a kite for 3 days, absolutely abusing the shit, but it was wonderful.
Well, I tell you what, man, I've had you on the phone for quite a while. I'd like to know what you guys have coming up in the future. I've seen a lot of tour dates coming up in March, and I know you guys are planning on kind of going all over the world. Like, what do you guys have coming up?
Coming up, we have the first part of the U.S. tour, which is like a month from March to April. And then we've got punk rock bowling, and then Australia. And then we're working on, the first round of, booking the first round of Europe right now. But we are going to go fucking all over the place.
Is there any place that you haven't been to yet that you're just dying to go to?
Yes, man. I want to go to Hong Kong so bad. Probably not the best time.
Yeah, it's not the best time, but Hong Kong is amazing, man.
I have never been, and I want to go. I mean, I generally just fucking anywhere. I've never been to Asia.
Okay.
So that
I'm sure you guys will go to Japan, man. The fat bands do great over there. You'll get over there.
Yeah, yeah. We're actually, we're going to make a point of doing that this year. We still haven't made it out, and we will.
Have you guys talked at all about Central or South America? Because I know Strung Out and Pennywise and those bands do amazing down there. I've been down there with some of my old bands, and it's a whole other world down there, man.
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely have talked about it. We really want to get down there because, in fact, we get more streams and sell more records in Chile than anywhere else in the world.
Well, we are currently the number one music podcast in Chile, so I think it's going to even get bigger right now.
Oh, killer. Well, everybody down there, hi, and we'll see you hopefully soon.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, we do really well all over the world. We have like 95 to like 100 countries that listen, but every week when I put out an episode, Chile, we're number one. I have no idea why.
That's fucking killer. And I mean, I share the similar sentiment. I have no idea why. But we do really well, you know, at least in theory down there. Got to get Ben down there.
Yeah, you got to get down there. It's great down there. So the new record is self-titled record, or 3,
mm-hmm.
is coming out on March 6th on Fat. Do you guys have like a big release show planned? I know that first date I saw is in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's going to be the kind of official release, even though it's 3 weeks after the album comes out.
Okay.
That'll be like the release show, so to speak.
Awesome, man. Well, would you like to plug anything else, like the socials for the band or anything?
I mean, no, it's all pretty straightforward. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. Stay up to date. Follow me on Instagram, Zach Quinstagram, to get like to stay up to date with all of my projects. I guess that's it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, dude, it was great. And if you guys come through Indianapolis, we're going to hang out, okay?
Hell yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. Well, I'll talk to you later, Zach. Have a great tour. Good luck with the record, and come back and talk to us when that new solo disc's done, okay?
All right, buddy, we'll do.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later, man. Bye.
Bye.
So there it was, my conversation with Zach Quinn from the awesome band Pairs. I love their new record so much. The self-titled Pairs record, or three, if you'd like to call it three. It does have a three on the label. But it came out at the beginning of the month on Fat Records. You guys can get it now. It's on all the streaming sites. It's on YouTube. You can pick up a physical copy, vinyl, whatever you want, over at fatrec.com. And that's it for this week. Thank you so much. Shout out to Zach again. Thanks for coming on. Hope you're doing okay down in New Orleans. I know you guys are, quote unquote, one of the new hot spots. So I hope you're staying healthy and you're staying inside. And I hope to get to talk to you real soon, my man. And that's it for this week. I want to say that this is episode 99, which you guys know what that means. Next week, it's a big one. Episode 100. We are in the triple digits. I've been doing this podcast now for almost 2 years. We're going to hit that milestone. I was doing some reading online about podcasts, and it says that only like 3% of podcasts that are started globally hit the 100 episode milestone. So I'd like to thank everybody that's been on this ride with me since the beginning. Some of you guys have been emailing me and saying stuff to me since like episode 2 or 3. So thank you so much. I'm going to continue to do this. I love it so much, and I love the community that I've become a part of with this, and just meeting other podcasters and talking to all you guys from all over the world. It's really cool, and it means everything to me. And speaking of other podcasters, episode 100 is my sit-down chat with Mr. Dewey Halpus from the Pure Pleasure podcast, a network mate over on Jabberjaw. But I went out to Oregon a few weeks ago. Before all hell broke loose and we couldn't leave our house, I went to Oregon to visit some family, and I met this really cool guy that listens to the show named Mark, and he was my chauffeur, my tour guide, and drove me from Corvallis, where my aunt lives, all the way to Portland to hang out with Dewey. We went out and got some lunch, and then we went back to Dewey's house. I got to meet his family and everything, and we set up in his garage, and we did a really cool like hour and a half chat about music and podcasting and all kinds of cool stuff. And you guys are gonna have to wait till next week for that. Like I said, episode 100, I'm so stoked. I never thought I was gonna get to 100 episodes, and it happened. It's pretty cool. And I've got, I think, almost the next 15 episodes planned out. So we're just gonna keep rolling. And thank you so much for coming on this journey with me. It means everything. Speaking of doing this for 2 years, if you remember the 1 year number 52 that we did last year, it was an Ask Chris episode co-hosted by my awesome, amazing, beautiful wife, Felicia Swinney. And Felicia is going to come back for episode 104, which is going to be here in about a month or so. And I'm going to do some more, a round of questions. So if you guys have questions, you can hit me up, all the socials. It's at TOTOT podcast, or you can email TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. Ask your questions. You can ask Felicia questions as well. I will ask her the questions on the show. Last time it was a lot more questions for me, but I actually got a lot of feedback and you guys liked her. Some of you guys liked her better than me. So you can ask her questions also, anything you guys want. So episode 104 is going to be the Ask Chris and Felicia episode. And I hope you guys are excited as I am, and send in some cool questions and we'll get it done. We'll get it taken care of. So as always, if you guys are feeling generous, you don't want to do the Patreon, you don't want to do any of that stuff, you don't want to sponsor episodes, just make a donation to the Venmo. It really helps this show get going. It's at Christopher Swinney. It helps out, even if it's 50 cents, a dollar, whatever. It'll help me out with my equipment and everything that it takes to do this podcast. So if you're feeling generous, hit up my virtual tip jar, Venmo, at Christopher Swinney. So make sure you guys are self-quarantining, social distancing, stay safe, stay healthy, just stay home. We got to get through this, and together we can get through it. But there's no shortage of really cool content out there that is being created because we're all stuck at home. So go search it out and support your favorite musicians, your favorite podcasts, anybody that's doing something cool and creative that is entertaining you. Make sure to support them. And that's it for this week. I'm going to leave you with the new single from the new self-titled Pairs record. It is entitled Comfortably Dumb. It's really cool. There's a great video on YouTube, so make sure you check that out. But I'm going to jump out of here, and I will see you guys next week for episode 100 with my good buddy, Mr. Dewey Halpus from the Peer Pleasure Podcast. And while you're at it, go listen to some of Dewey's stuff, man. His episodes are awesome. And if you like my show, you're really going to dig Dewey's show. So I will see you guys next week. This is Pairs with Comfortably Dumb. Peace.
That's what I turn.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.